all about the gzera that our Gemara describes. The gzera shema yavirenu dal ramas b'shus harabim. This is a concern that comes up a few times in Shas, and we're going to go through all those cases and try to extrapolate some very interesting points from them. We do find in a number of cases where the Gemara is concerned that you're not allowed to do something on Shabbos because maybe you're going to carry that item outside. Let's just go through the cases that the Gemara has. Let's mention some of the cases that the Rishonim quote. Let's mention some of the cases the Acharonim quote, just so we know what it is that we're dealing with. We're going to go in order of Shas. So the first case that's mentioned in Shas is in Psachim, Daf Samach Tes Amid Aleph, where the Gemara has the story about the Efer HaParah, that you have the Parah Aduma. After you shech the Parah Aduma, you go and you burn its ashes. You put the ashes into water. Now you have to sprinkle somebody with the Parah Aduma water in order that they can become tahor. If they have a Tumas Mace, that's the way that they can become pure. Says the Gemara, you have to sprinkle them on very specific days, on day 3 and day 7. Says the Gemara, what if day 3 or day 7 fall out to be on Shabbos? So the Gemara tells us one is not allowed to do the Hazas Efer HaPara on Shabbos. Why not? The water is not Muktzah, it's water. So why shouldn't I be allowed to do it? There's no malacha involved. I'm not really doing anything to the person. I'm just sprinkling a little bit of water. If, let's say, I don't know about you, but every Shabbos when I wash my hands for Netilas Yadayim, I sprinkle water on my kids, right? As you're walking to the table. So that's a malacha, that's nothing. What's wrong with that? Says the Gemara, the famous principle from Rabbah, we have a concern, Shema Yavirenu Dalet Amos Peshus HaRabbah. Maybe you're going to take that water. You're the Kohen who's supposed to sprinkle it on the person who needs to become Tahor, who needs to be purified. Maybe you're going to carry that outside and you're going to violate the Yisr of Hotzah on Shabbos. That's case number one. Case number two in Shas is our Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chavtes, where the Gemara tells us that if Rosh Hashanah's out on Shabbos, really we should have been allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbos, because after all, it's a chachma ve'ena malacha. There's nothing really wrong with that. Why should the shofar be muktzah? What should be the problem with handling the shofar at all? However, says the Gemara, the Chachamim instituted that one is not allowed to blow the shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos because we have this concern, Gzeira Shema Yavirena. We're concerned, Ein HaKol B'kiyam Itkiyah Shofar. Not everybody knows how to blow the shofar, and therefore maybe you're going to take the shofar to the expert shofar blower, to the expert Baal Tokeya. You're going to ask him to teach you how to do it, and by going and bringing it to his home, you're going to violate the Yisr of Havara Bershus HaRabim on Shabbos. Third case where the Gemara mentions it, it is in Mesechas Sukkah Daf Mem Beis, where the Gemara says, really we should have said, U'lakachtam lachem ha'yom ha'rishon, you have to take the lulav and esrog on the first day of Sukkot. What if the first day of Sukkot falls out on a Shabbos? The Gemara warns us we are not allowed to take the lulav and esrog. Why not? What can be wrong with that? Why should the lulav and esrog be muktzah? After all, it's the mitzvah item that you're instructed to use on that day. Says the Gemara, the same concern. Not everybody knows how to make the bracha on the lulav. Not everybody knows how to shake the lulav in the proper direction, so therefore we assume there's this concern of Shema Yavirenu Dalet Amos Peshus HaRabim, and therefore the lulav should not be taken on the first day of Sukkot, even though you're foregoing a mitzvah d'araisa. The same way by shofar, you're foregoing a mitzvah d'araisa, but the din d'rabbanan takes precedence. Then we have a Gemara Mitzvah Daf Yud Zayin, where the Gemara says, what about Tvilas Kalim? The Gemara says, what if you have a bunch of Kalim that you forgot to bring to the mikvah on Erev Yom Tif? And now here you are in Yom Tif itself, and you want to go ahead and bring them to the mikvah on Shabbos. Can you go ahead, and you're having a lot of company, you forgot to take care of what had to be taken care of before Shabbos begins. Says the Gemara, you're not allowed to put them into the mikvah on Shabbos. What's the concern? The mikvah is not muktzah. After all, human beings go into the mikvah. So the Gemara has a few opinions here. The first opinion of the Gemara is, Shema Yavirenu. After all, you're going to carry your pots and pans, you're going to bring them to the mikvah. Not everybody has a mikvah in their backyard, not everybody has a mikvah downstairs in the house, so we're concerned you're going to carry it down peninsula, you're going to go and bring it to the mikvah there, and then you're going to violate the Yisr of Havara Dalet Amos Peshus HaRabim. That's the Gemara's concern. The Gemara then says, Rabbi Yosef is of the opinion, that's not the consideration. You're not going to forget that you're not allowed to carry it outside. Rather, it's Mishum Schita. Maybe you're going to squeeze something out. So we generally are used to being Tovel Kalim to use in our homes for as cutlery or something of that nature that we're going to use at our meals. But if you have other kinds of kalim that became tamei and you want to put them in the mikvah, the Gemara says you're not allowed to do that because we have a concern Mishum Schita. The Gemara has another consideration. Maybe the reason you're not allowed to do it is because Shema Yasha. Maybe you're going to leave everything over. You're busy during the week. Shabbos is going to be your day, like Sheva Brachas. Shabbos is going to be the day when you're off of work, so you're going to go ahead and take care of all of that instead of focusing on Shabbos. And finally, the Gemara says Tikkun Keli, because it's like Misakin Mana. It's a Isur D'Rabbanan, that maybe it's like you're being Misakin the Kli by putting it into the mikvah, but be it as it may, that's another one of the cases where we find Gzeira Shema Yavirenu. The Gemara's first opinion is the reason you're not allowed to bring anything to the mikvah on Shabbos, even if you have a mikvah downstairs in your house and there's no concern at all that you're going to bring it anywhere else, still the Gemara says you're not allowed to because perhaps Shema Yavirenu, maybe you're going to carry it outside and violate the Isra of Mavir Daladamas Bishus HaRabim. We then have a Gemara in Megillah and Daf Dalet, where the Gemara says that Hakol Chayav Mikriyas HaMegillah, everybody is obligated to read the Megillah on Purim. However, Ein Hakol Bekiyin B'Mikra Megillah. Not everybody knows how to read the Megillah, and therefore the Gemara has a concern when Purim falls out on Shabbos, like it does this year, I think. No? In Eretz Yisrael, it falls out on Shabbos? Falls out on Sunday? So in Eretz Yisrael, sometimes you have it falls out on Shabbos. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But the Gemara says when you have Purim falls out on Shabbos, so we have Gzeira Shema Yavirenu. Maybe someone's going to forget about the fact that they were supposed to be the designated Bal Koreh for the Megillah. Then they're going to carry their Megillah out to the expert Bal Koreh to teach them how to lane. And the Gemara has that concern, and therefore on Purim, Shechalias B'Shabbos, one is not allowed to lane the Megillah. And there again, Rabbi Yosef disagrees. He says that's not the reason why, but rather he says we have a different consideration. Nobody is going to forget about the Mikra Megillah. Nobody's going to carry outside. But rather, Rabbi Yosef says, "Mipnei neim shel aniyim nesuas the Mikra Megillah," because they're all looking forward. Everybody knows when it comes time to the Mikra Megillah, you wait outside, you collect the money. If you're an ani who needs help, you know that on Purim everyone's hearts are a little bit more open. If it's going to be Shabbos, they're all losing out on the best day of Parnassa for the year. Therefore, says Rabbi Yosef, we have to be considerate to the aniyim, and we're not allowed to lay in the Megillah on Purim. So Tosas asked the Kasha. On Shabbos, on Purim, that falls out on Shabbos. So Tosis asked the Kasha there, what, Rabbi Yosef doesn't believe in this Takana of Gzeirah Shema Yavirenu? He never heard of it. Why is he disagreeing with Rabbah? This is a universal institution that we have by Shofar on Shabbos, by Lulav on Shabbos, by everything else that we mentioned so far. Why all of a sudden when it comes to Mikra Megillah, Rabbi Yosef says, no, we don't accept that. Why is he giving a different reason? Why is he objecting to the simple reason of Gzeirah Shema Yavirenu? Maybe you're going to carry the Megillah outside and you're going to violate the Yisr of Mavir Daladam Sbishus HaRabim. Why does he have to come with a new reason? Says the Tosis, the reason why is because Gzeirah Shema Yavirenu only applies in certain places. What about if a person is in the Beis HaMikdash? What if you're in the Beis HaMikdash? Does Shema Yavirenu apply there? Says Rabbi Yosef, therefore we have to come up with a new reason. What if you're in a place where Shema Yavirenu doesn't apply? Kohanim's Rizimheim, like we said before. Ein Shvus B'Mikdash, you have something, a mitigating factor that tells that this doesn't apply at all. Still says Rabbi Yosef, we would not go ahead and blow the shofar, we would not go ahead and read the Megillah on Purim Shechalias B'Shabbos, even in those instances, because a Neyam Shel Aniyim are looking forward to the day when we're going to do the Mikra Megillah, and you're going to rob them of that opportunity. Tosas in Maseches Megillah asks Akasha where he wants to know, how come the Gemara never talks about the concern of Gzeirah Shema Yavirenu by a Bris Milah on Shabbos? After all, we know that a Bris Milah is something that you have to carry the knife. So, why aren't we concerned? What? Why aren't we concerned that maybe the Bris Milah, you're going to carry the knife, and you're going to violate the same Isser by everything else, by Shofar and by Lulav, which we also pushed away a mitzvah d'araisa that you cannot make up. So to over here, we're pushing away Mila. We should have said, Mila is not allowed to be performed on Shabbos. And yet the Gemara says, by Yom HaShmini, we learn from there, Afilu b'Shabbos, you do the Bris Mila, even if it falls out on Shabbos, this is something that we're all supposed to do. So Tosis gives the answer because he says that, number one, everybody knows that Mila is something that's Nichrisu Aleh Yud Gimel Brisos. You're not going to make a mistake. Bris Mila is something that we take very seriously. No one's going to make any mistake at all when it comes to the Bris Mila. And secondly, says Tosis, the whole concern here is, maybe I don't know how to blow the shofar. Maybe I don't know how to read the Megillah. And therefore I'm going to bring the shofar or the Megillah to someone else to teach me how to do it. What do you mean? Maybe you're going to say, I don't know how to do a Bris Mila, then why do you sign up to be the moral? It's a sakana. If you don't know what you're doing, you would never get involved in the Bris Mila at all. And therefore that whole consideration does not apply at all when it comes to the Bris Mila. That is the answer of the Balei HaTosis. The Ran gives a different answer, and this Ran we're going to have to get to later because it's relevant to what we're saying. So maybe we'll get to the Ran later, but just keep in mind that Ran is coming to answer why the Gemara is not concerned by Bris Mila. Why do we say that when it comes to Bris Mila, There's no problem at all. No one's going to carry the knife outside. No one's going to carry the baby outside to a specific place to do the bris milah. Why are we concerned about that? There is a further kasha that's asked by the Stechemed, and this is a question that he quotes in the name of the Netziv. What about by Pesach night? What if Pesach falls out on Shabbos? So why aren't we concerned, asked the Netziv, that you shouldn't be allowed to eat matzah? After all, matzah has to be eaten with very specific rules. How many weeks do we spend before Pesach trying to figure out exactly how you're supposed to go through the Seder, how exactly you eat the matzah, and how many kizesim, and what's the shear, and you have to do the haseba, and we have so many provisions of how exactly it's supposed to be eaten, and it has to be with the Haggadah al-Seder ha-brachos. Why aren't we concerned, says the Netziv? Shemi Avirena Dalet Amos, maybe you're going to walk to the rabbi's house and you're going to violate the Yisra of Maver Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim. Therefore, we should say, the same way we get rid of the mitzvah of Lulav on the first day of Sukkot, and the same way we get rid of the mitzvah of Shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, if it falls on Shabbos, so too we should say, get rid of the mitzvah of Matzah on the night of the Seder, because maybe you're going to carry your matzah to the rabbi's house and you're going to ask him how to perform the mitzvah. Says the Netziv, not a concern at all. Why? Because he says, Ein Derech Latzeis Balayla. Nobody goes out of the house late at night, and therefore you're having the Seder in the middle of the night. By the time you get up to the point in the Seder where it's time to eat matzah, it's already 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. Who would venture out that late at night? Very unusual, very unlikely, says the Netziv. Nothing to be concerned about at all. If that's true, you should have a big question. No, El Shimur is one problem. Megillah! We make a Gzerah, you're not allowed to lay in the Megillah. Purim falls out on Shabbos, so we say you cannot lay in the Megillah at night. Why can you lay in the Megillah at night? If you say, Ein Darkam Latzis Balayla, says the Netziv, the answer is because you wouldn't be allowed to lay in it during the day. So because you wouldn't be allowed to lay in it during the day, because of Shemi Avirenu, therefore we make Exeri, you can't lay in it at all on Purim Shechalias B'Shabbos, you have to lay in on a different day. Since you can't lay in during the day because of Shemi Avirenu, can't lay in at night either. And the Stechemet says, what are you talking about? What are you getting involved in such a shayla? Nobody's going to carry the matzah to somebody's house to figure out how to do haseba. Do haseba. Lean on your side. Follow the Haggadah. Everything's self-explanatory. There's no questions that should come up on the night of the Seder. Nothing to be concerned about at all. And he says, we don't have to come on to all these fancy answers that were suggested by the Netziv. It's unnecessary. It's very simple why they don't make Gzera by matzah, because there's nothing to be concerned about. So those are all the general places where both the Mara and the Rishonim discussed the cases of Shema Yavirenu Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim. I would be remiss if we learned the Suga of Gzera Shema Yavirenu and I didn't mention this incredible insight of the Pnei Menachem, the Ger Rebbe, where he quotes the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says that we have the opinion in Masechah Shabbos Daf Hei of Ben Azai. Ben Azai was of the opinion that when we're talking about Hotzah on Shabbos, Havara Derech B'Shus HaRabim, he says the only time you violate the Avera is when... So generally we say if you walk in Rosh Hashanah, I'm holding something. But Ben Azai is of the opinion that Mahalech Ka'ome Dami. He's of the opinion that every step that you take is Akira and Hanacha. So you always take one step up, then you take one step down. So you're never walking Dalet Amos, so you can never violate the Isser. So therefore Ben Azai is of the opinion Mahalech is Ka'ome Dami. So the Yerushalmi asked the question, if it's true that Mahalech is Ka'ome Dami, how do you ever violate the Isser of Maver Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim? That's the question that the Yerushalmi asked. What does it mean? What does the Malacha mean? What does the Yisr mean according to Ben Azai? If every time a person takes a step, it's as if you've done a Hakira and a Hanacha, you put a step up, step down, and it's never as if you've accumulated Dalet Amos because every step is calculated on its own, so then what's the issue at all? How do you ever have the Yisr, how do you ever violate the Malacha of Maver Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim? Answers the Yerushalmi, Bikfitza, you have a person who jumps Dalet Amos, and that's when you're going to violate. You jump Dalet Amos, holding a baseball, holding something else, you're going to violate the Yisra of Maver Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim. Asked Rabbi Kiva Eger, the story is put in the biography of Rabbi Kiva Eger's grandson. What was the story with his grandson? Rabbi Leibel Eger became the greatest nekama to his grandfather. He became a Hasidish Rebbe. A lot of interesting stories about their relationship. I think it says that when Rabbi Leibel Eger went to his grandfather to visit once for Pesach, so the Hasidim don't wear tefillin, and the other communities do wear tefillin. The Misnagdim were very careful that they should wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So he went to his grandfather, and he didn't know what's he going to do. He was there for Yontif, and how's he going to deal with this? So he goes to Rabbi Kiva Eger's house, and Rabbi Kiva Eger apparently said, I'm going to allow you not to wear your tefillin on Chol HaMoed, but here I have a blank tefillin that doesn't have any parshiyos in it, and I'm going to need you to wear those in shul, because I don't want you just to go around and not wear tefillin at all. I don't want you to violate your practice. But he said, I'm not going to let you get away with that. Apparently that's the story they say. So there's a lot of fascinating discussions that took place between the grandfather and the grandson, but one discussion was as follows. Rabbi Leibel Eger was a young child. He was learning with his grandfather, Rabbi Kiva Eger, and Rabbi Kiva Eger asked him the following. If the Yerushalmi tells us the only way, according to Ben Azza, you could violate the Isser of Mavri Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim is if you actually jumped Dalet Amos. So he said, what kind of takana was this? The Chacham came along and said, you're not allowed to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Why? Because Mavri Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim, maybe you're going to carry it outside. Yeah? What's the likelihood that somebody's going to take the shofar and start flying through the streets in order to get to the person to teach them how to blow? Most people who have a problem with the shofar are going to walk nicely through the street like anybody else, any other normal human being, and they'll go find the person who can teach them how to blow the shofar. So he asked his grandson, according to Ben Azai, that Mahalach Ka'ome Dami, and the only time you violate Mabra Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRabim is if you actually jump Dalet Amos, which is very unlikely, jumping 8 feet. What was the whole takan in the first place? Reb Leib Leger said to him, you're such a litvak. You know what the answer is? Who would hold the shofar and not be jumping 8 feet? Come on! That's what everybody does when they hold the shofar and a lulav and the tzitzis and the mila and everything else. When you're on your way to do the mitzvah, you don't walk, you're running, you're jumping 8 feet. And this is what the Pnei Menachem pointed out. He said, it's a very beautiful story, but he says it's Ben Azai L'Shitasu. Because Ben Azai is the one who says in Pirkei Avos, have a rutz the mitzvah kala kabachamura. So this is natural. Ben Azai is of the opinion, this is what we all do when we do mitzvahs. Have a rutz the mitzvah kala, everybody's running. So therefore, Ben Azai is of the opinion, the only time you violate the yisra of havar dalet amos b'shus harabim is when you actually jump, pikvitza, you jump 8 feet, you jump dalet amos. And that's not a problem at all. Don't say it's unlikely that's going to happen. That's very likely. After all, I'm the one who said in Pirkei Avos, have a rutz the mitzvah kala kabachamura. This is the attitude we should always have whenever we approach a mitzvah that we are performing. So that is a very beautiful insight, a very beautiful pshat, very chassidish pshat, but it's very nice regardless. The Gemara in Erevin speaks a lot about how we properly define a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa. The Gemara in Shabbos and Erevin talk about Melecha Shabbos in general. Erevin is generally limited to many of the issues pertaining to Rishus HaRabim and Rishus HaYachid and how you make a proper Erev. So the Gemara in Erevin says that the same way we derive all of the Melechas on Shabbos from the Melechas HaMishkan, from the way they constructed the Mishkan, so too we derive what a Rishus HaRabim is going to be, and Hilchas Erevin, from the way that the encampment was in the Mishkan, in the times of the Midbar. So says the Gemara as follows. When we're trying to figure out what is a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa, now again, just to be clear, if you have a Rishus HaRabim that's considered a Rishus HaRabim, bona fide Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa, you cannot make an Erev as we have today. An Erev with a string and the pole only works when you have something which is considered to be a Rishus HaRabim D'Rabbanan, which was the whole issue in Manhattan, where Rav Moshe was opposed because he felt it was perhaps a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa, and they weren't able to do that. You can't circumvent that problem. If you have a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa, you can't just put up a string and assume that that's good enough. So what is the definition of a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa? How do you know what is considered to be a real Rishus HaRabim, which is not able to have an Erev put up around it? Says the Gemara, well, let's look at the way they had the encampment in the Midbar around the Mishkan. That's going to be a Rishus HaRabim because that's what they had, and that's when the Melachas of Shabbos were taught, and that's what was meant at the time when Moshe Rabbeinu taught us all the Halachas. So therefore, says the Gemara as follows. Since in the Mishkan they had to have two wagons, two agalos, that held the whole Mishkan and all the beams as they were traveling, that took up Tes Zayin Amma. How long is Tes Zayin Amma? 35 feet, something like that. So that took up Tes Zayin Amma. Therefore, we assume, in order to be considered a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa, in order to be considered a real Rishus HaRabim, you have to have a street that is the width of Tes Zayin Amma. Like a highway. Tes Zayin Amma, 35 feet. A regular street that we have outside over here, even if it's a busy street, that's not going to be considered Tes Zayin Amma. Therefore, we assume that's the first criterion that's necessary in order to consider something to be a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa. It has to be Tes Zayin Amma wide. Fine. Some Rishonim say that's the only criterion. So if you have a street that can be as busy as possible, hustle and bustle and everything, and millions of people driving through the street, but happens to be a very narrow street, and there's always traffic on there because it's so narrow, some of the Rishonim are of the opinion that that is not a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa. You can make an Erev over that because since it's not the right width of the way the Machaneh was at the time when they had the wagons going through with the Mishkan, therefore it's not considered a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa. You'll see in a minute why we're talking about Erevin. You'll understand. It's very relevant to this halacha. Other Rishonim argue, no, that's not the only criterion to figure out what's a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa. Another criterion necessary, and this is the opinion of Rashi and the Bahag and the Smag and the Rush and many of the Rishonim, the prominent Rishonim say, that we have another criterion. Number one, it has to be Tes Zayin Amma. If it's anything smaller than Tes Zayin Amma, that's not considered a real street. That's considered a small street. So that's considered only Rishus HaRabim D'Rabbanan, a Carmelis. However, says the Rishonim, there's a second criterion also. Even if it's Tes Zayin Amma, even if it's a huge highway, and it's very wide, and it's 35, 40 feet wide, which you have sometimes in a big highway, still, if you don't have Shishim Rebo, if you don't have 600,000 people passing through the street, then we consider that to be only a karmelis. Because after all, in the times of the encampment in the Midbar by the Mishkan, they had 600,000 men who were living there at the time. Therefore, we assume that's the only defining characteristics of a Rishus HaRabim. If you don't have that, this is not considered a Rishus HaRabim at all. And then there's a further discussion, even if you assume that those are the two criteria necessary to make something be branded as a Rishus HaRabim Daraisa. Number one, you need a street that has the width of Tezayin Amma. Number two, you need 600,000 people. What does it mean you need 600,000 people? Does it mean 600,000 people have to go there every single day? Or it means that it would be able to theoretically have 600,000 people passing through it, even though every day we don't have that. So that's the general question of how exactly we define a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa. Do you need only the criterion of Tezayin Amma, or should we assume you need two criteria? Number one, Tezayin Amma. Number two, 600,000 people who pass through. Based on that, the Shulchan Aruch writes that Atab is Manazet, nowadays in our generation, we don't have a real Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa. How many places do we have where you have both of those criterion? Where you have, number one, a highway or a place that really holds 600,000 people, and it also has the width of Tezayin Amma. Very unusual, very unlikely. Therefore, the Shulchan Aruch pretty much says this, but the Ramah clearly states it, and this is what the Mishnah Berurah is of the opinion. This is why we have a lot of kulas and erevin nowadays, because we generally assume that our whole community is only a karmelis midirabanan. It's not a real Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa because we don't have those two criterion. Even though you have a street which is very busy and you might have 600,000 people, but very often that street is not 16 amas wide. And very often you have a 16 amas wide, but you don't have 600,000 people, so therefore we assume nowadays all we're dealing with is a karmelis midirabanan. You don't really have a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa. If that's the assumption, if that's true, ask the Bir Halacha a very obvious kasha. We have here, what are we telling you? Don't blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbos. Don't shake the lulav on Sukkah that falls out on Shabbos. Don't go ahead and perhaps do the bris milah. Again, that was the question that the Rishonim dealt with. All these issues, don't do this on Shabbos. That, what's the issue? What's the concern? What are we dealing with? If nowadays we don't even have a Rosh Hashanah D'Oraisa, you cannot violate the Yisr of Mavr Dalet Amos Rosh Hashanah. Says the Bir Halacha, what's the whole concern? You're going to tell me to be mevatel the mitzvah aseh of shofar? You're going to tell me to be mevatel the mitzvah aseh of lulav? You're going to tell me not to do the Megillah? You're going to tell me all these different cases? I shouldn't get involved. I shouldn't eat the matzah like the Netziv suggested. Don't do all these things. Why? Because maybe you're going to carry it outside. Yeah, what's so bad? Even if you carry it outside, that's not a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa. You're not going to violate a Nisa D'Oraisa. So what? They were concerned of an Issa D'Rabbanan? So because of the concern of an Issa D'Rabbanan, they're going to tell you to be the mevatel the mitzvah of shofar, of lulav, of all these other things? How can that be? This is the kasha of the Mishnah Berurah in two different places in Hilchos Erevin, and he's very troubled. Why is it that this Issa D'Rabbanan applies nowadays if, after all, we don't have a status of a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa nowadays? So at worst, what you're going to violate is an Issa D'Rabbanan of carrying a karmelis. That's more important than the Din D'Oraisa of blowing the shofar, of shaking the lulav? Very strong kasha. And this is a kasha not only asked by the Bir Halacha, but it's a kasha that the Marsham quotes as well. You look at number Beis. The Marsham writes in the name of the Sefer Besamim Rosh. Now again, the Besamim Rosh is a very controversial Sefer. A lot of questions about the authenticity of it. But here he quotes in the Besamim Rosh and he says, Sha'alti espi mori, I asked my Rebbe, Bekama yisurim hotza b'shabes anusamchem al she'en lanu rishus harab machshav. We are so makel nowadays in Hilchos Erevin because we assume, we don't really have a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa nowadays. All we have is a karmelis midrabanan, and therefore you can use this kula and that kula in Erevin, not relevant to our sugya tonight. But he says, if that's true, then why do we say nowadays that you shouldn't blow shofar and you shouldn't shake the lulav? Look at the next paragraph, Eheshev Li. He gave some sort of answer that, yes, the Chachamim have the right to make that institution, even though it might not make perfect sense. But they don't want to make the Din of the Rabbanan a joke. They want to take them seriously. So maybe that's why they said that you should even forego the mitzvah d'oraisa of shofar, the mitzvah d'oraisa of lulav, in order that you shouldn't violate the Yisur d'Rabbanan of carrying a karmelis. Again, a very dochuk answer. Here we're talking about a Din d'oraisa. This is not something that, and we're talking about shofar. This is something that could be the highlight of our year. We know that it brings our tefillahs forward, and it's a very big highlight of our davening on Rosh Hashanah, and yet, because of the covet of the Chacham, Nimsar Adav al Chacham, and because we're looking out, we don't want their halachas to be a joke, therefore we're going to say you should push aside the Dinim D'Oraisa, the Mitzvahs D'Oraisa. That's a very hard thing to accept, but this is a very strong question that the Mishnah Berurah asks. And says the Mishnah Berurah, yes, you're right, once in a blue moon you have Manhattan, where you have Broadway, which you know, is a real Rishus HaRam Daraisa, you really have 600,000 people, you really have, I don't know, you have certain streets in Manhattan where it might really deem it as a Rishus HaRam Daraisa, but says the Mishnah Berurah, that's an Ir Yechidi Be'olam. You have once in a while, you have Budapest, he says, you have a city over here, city over there that has a Rishus HaRam Daraisa, but for most people in the world, that's not what they're dealing with. So you're going to make a whole Gzeira here to be Mevatel the Mitzvah of Shofar, to be Mevatel the Mitzvah of Lulav and everything else, because of those one or two cities, because of Manhattan and Budapest and a few other places where you have a real Rishus HaRam Daraisa, a real concern. What about everyone else in the world who doesn't have those concerns? So that's the kasha that the Mishnah Berurah leaves off with, and I think it's a very important question to be aware of when we're talking about our sugya in general. Our Gemara assumes that we have to be concerned. Shema Yavi Renu. Why do you have to be concerned? Why do you have to be concerned? Even from the outset, they shouldn't have made such a takana, such a gzera. How many cities in the times of Chazal were built like that? Let alone today when we have fancy big highways. How many cities in the times of Chazal were a real Rishus HaRam Daraisa? So this is a very important point to be aware of when we discuss the sugya of Rosh Hashanah Shechalis B'Shabbos. Is it really justified at all that we refrain from blowing the shofar? After all, what do we have to lose by blowing it? Maybe you're going to carry it outside. So what if you carry it outside? At worst, you're going to violate an Issa D'Rabbanan. Why should the mitzvah D'Araisa be pushed aside as a result of just a mitzvah D'Rabbanan that's in your way? An important question to consider. So we mentioned last week briefly, I just want to mention it quickly again because we're going to add on to it a lot this evening. A lot. We only have 15 minutes. But let's discuss the following. We mentioned last week, so our Gemara comes to the conclusion that Mabar Dalad Am Spishus HaRam is a concern, even though we have the Mishnah Berurah's Kasha and we have the Besamim Rosh, but the bottom line is, we have the concern. And because we have the concern, therefore our Gemara says, no blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos, no shaking the lulav on Sukkot that falls out on Shabbos, no reading the Megillah on Purim that falls out on Shabbos, all of those are out of bounds. As Rabbi Akiva Eiger last week, we mentioned it, look at number Gimel, what happens if a person violates the halacha and goes ahead on Rosh Hashanah Shechalias B'Shabbos, against the rule, against the halacha, they go ahead and they blow the shofar anyway. Do they get anything for that? Is that considered a kiyum ha-mitzvah? Would they say Shechiyanu the second day when they go ahead and blow the shofar again? Or do you say, no, they already did the mitzvah? So somebody mentioned last week that Shechiyanu was a bad argument. You say both days. So somebody mentioned that last week, I forgot who it was. But again, is it considered like you've been mekayim a mitzvah at all, or do you say, nope, once the Chacham said you're not allowed to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shechalis B'Shabbos, even if you go ahead and do it, it's as if you're mechal Shabbos. And not only like you're mechal Shabbos, you get no points at all. You didn't even blow the shofar. Nothing at all. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger weighs in on the issue, number Gimel, and he says as follows, Gam Gadol Shetokea B'Shabbos, even if you have somebody who goes ahead and blows the shofar on Shabbos, and they know that they're not allowed to, but they do it anyway. Kiyum mitzvah shofar bizmano ela da'abra al shvus b'shabbos. You have something to work out that you violated the Issur D'Rabbanan. Chacham said not to do it, you violated what they said to do. However, you have fulfilled your mitzvah midaraisa. And this was the big discussion at the time of Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger. We learned about it a few weeks ago. That when you have a situation where they were allowed to blow the shofar on Shabbos, but there was a big discussion about whether or not it was justified. What if I'm one of those who's opposed to the blowing of the shofar on Shabbos? Is there any reason for me to go to the shul and listen to those who are violating the Yisra on Shabbos of blowing the shofar? Or do you say, no, I have nothing to gain, because once the Chacham said you're not allowed to, so then there's nothing to gain at all. So that's the question. Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, no problem at all. We mentioned last week that the Chalkas Yoav, who's one of the great, outstanding Talmidim of the Avnei Nezer, Chalkas Yoav has a Sefer Kaba de Kashyaisa, and there he says he doesn't understand. How does Rabbi Akiva Eiger say such a thing? Is Rabbi Akiva Eiger not aware of the fact that the Bali Atosu said in Maseches Sukkah, like we saw last week, when the Gemara says you're not allowed to sit with your table inside of the house and your body inside of the sukkah because Shema Yimashech HaShulchano, maybe you're going to end up eating inside of the house instead of eating in your sukkah. Tosus writes over there, if you did it, and you had your table inside of the house, and you yourself were sitting inside of the sukkah, and you violated the Din D'Rabbanan, Lokia Mitzvah Sukkah, you weren't Mekayim the Mitzvah D'Arais of Sukkah at all. The Chachamim regulated the Halacha to say that if you don't listen to the guidelines of how we tell you to do it, it's as if you haven't performed the Mitzvah at all. So how does Rabbi Akiva Eiger say over here, not so? Doesn't he know that Tosus says that? So we got into a whole discussion last week whether that Tosus can be extended to other cases or not. That's for last week. But again, that was a very important discussion. And from there, there's a parallel discussion that emerges by Purim as well. Let's say you have Purim HaMashulash. Is this year a Purim HaMashulash in Eretz Yisrael? No? So some years you have a Purim HaMashulash. What does it mean? It means that if you're in Yerushalayim, you're in Ir Mukav Chama, So Purim is really Tezva. So Purim really falls out for you on Shabbos. And because Gemara said in Mishas Megillah, you're not allowed to lay in the Megillah on Shabbos. Look at number hey. The Gemara says the Kuli Amamia Megillah b'Shabbos lo karidon. We're not allowed to lay in the Megillah even when it falls out on Shabbos. Why? My taima Amar Rabba Hakol Chayav Mikriyas Hamegillah ve'ain Hakol Bekim Mimikar Megillah. Everyone has to lay in the Megillah, but we're concerned. Maybe you're not going to do it properly. Maybe you're going to forget, and you're going to have to go to the Baal Koreh to teach you how to do it. And therefore, Shami Avi Renu, good old Gzera Shami Avi Renu, like we have in Argamar, like we have in Sukkah, like we have in Psachim, all the different cases. Well, says the Avnei Nezer, we have the following issue. So let's say you have a Purim HaMashulash. You're supposed to really lay in the Megillah on Shabbos. The Gemara says you're not allowed to lay in the Megillah on Shabbos. Why can't you lay in the Megillah on Shabbos? Because Shami Avi Renu. Says the Avnei Nezer, so what do we do in that case? When do we lay in? What? No, we lay in the Megillah on Friday. We lay in the Megillah on Friday in those days. So you lay in the Megillah on Friday, and then you're supposed to lay in it on Shabbos, but we push it up a day, you lay in it on Friday. So now, says the Avnei Nezer, what happens in the following scenario? What happens, you have a person who goes ahead and lays the Megillah on Shabbos. Let's say Friday, they totally forgot about it. They knew that it said on the calendar, Purim's on Shabbos. They didn't realize, oh, it's Purim Shabbos, so you're not supposed to lane. They go ahead and they lane on Shabbos. Do they get points at all for the Mikra Megillah? Do you say no? Not at all. That's a discussion with the Avnei Nezer and his contemporary. Should we assume that the same way Rabbi Kiva Eger and others argued by someone who blows the shofar on Shabbos that they weren't supposed to do? They argue whether or not you get points, you get credit at all for the mitzvah, or did the Chachamim come along and say, it's as if the mitzvah doesn't exist at all on Shabbos? Maybe over here as well by Mikra Megillah, we should say, if a person goes ahead and reads the Megillah on Shabbos, it's as if you've done nothing. Why? Because once the Chachamim regulated and said, you don't have a right to do this on Shabbos, on Purim Shechalis B'Shabbos, that means, if you go ahead and you violate what the Chachamim told you to do, it's as if you've done nothing at all. That's the discussion between the Avnei Nezer and his contemporaries. So you'll say, why is that relevant? When does that ever happen? Everybody knows we make an announcement this year, Mikra Megillah is going to be on Friday, we know it's not going to be on Shabbos, who's ever going to make that mistake? Says the Cheshek Shlomo and others, well, think about the following case. What if you have a boy who's becoming bar mitzvah on Shabbos? So he goes to shul on Friday, he hears the Megillah. But he was only chayiv midirabbanan as a katan. He was only chayiv, again, the whole Mikra Megillah is only dirabbanan. But he was only chayiv on a level of dirabbanan, double dirabbanan. Number one, he's a katan. Number two, he's only it's only Mikra Megillah, so it's a double dirabbanan. Now he becomes a bar chayuv on Shabbos. Now he becomes a bar chayuv on Shabbos. Now he becomes a bar mitzvah. He becomes a gadol on Shabbos itself. Why is he not a bar chayuva? Oh, so that's the question. Is he considered a bar chayuva now in the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah or not? On one hand, I'll say, what do you mean? There's no obligation to read the Megillah today. After all, it's Shabbos. Chacham said you're not allowed to read the Megillah today. You did your obligation yesterday. Forget about it. It's over. You did it. And there is no obligation today. So the kid doesn't have to worry about it. Or, says Rav Shlomo HaKohen Mivilna, maybe we should argue, no, there is an obligation to lay in the Megillah today. However, the Chachamim were concerned that for most people, maybe you're going to Shemi Avi Renu. HaKol Chayav in the Gemara says everyone's Chayav in Mikra Megillah. Not everybody knows how to lay in the Megillah. Maybe you're going to bring it to a Baal Koreh to teach you how to lay in, and therefore you're going to do the Yisra of Mavri Dalet Amos B'Shus HaRab. So therefore, the Gemara says we're not allowed to lay in the Megillah on Shabbos. Now, what about this Katan? Why would it be different for him? Why should it be different for him? What about Gzeira Shemi Avi Renu? Listen to the Chiddush. Listen to the Chiddush here. So what they want to base the Chiddush on is a Ran. We said before, Tosus Asakasha, why don't we say that a Bris Milah is not allowed to be performed on Shabbos because Gzeira Shemi Avi Renu? Maybe you're going to carry the baby, maybe you're going to carry the knife. Tosus gives one answer. The Ran gives a different answer. Look what the Ran says. The bottom of the page, number above, Yesh Makshim. Why aren't we concerned? Maybe you're going to carry the child to the Bris Milah or the knife to the Bris Milah. Why are we concerned? Shemi Avi Renu, like we're concerned everywhere else. Says the Ran, the answer is, V'yesh lomar, the shiny shofar v'lulav v'megillah. Shofar and lulav and megillah are going to be in a separate category. Mishim hachi gazrinan bahu. Why are we concerned specifically by shofar, lulav and megillah? It's something that I'm obligated to do. Not everybody knows how to do the nanuim properly. not everybody knows how to make the brachas properly. And therefore we have a concern there. Kulam chudim lilmod v'latzis yidei chovason. Sukkot morning, I'm nervous. What's going to be my hadassah, my aravis, everything? Do I know how to shake? Do I not? Everybody's focusing on their own mitzvah. Everyone's bahul. Everyone's mind is floating around, is wandering. They're wondering, how am I going to get to shul with all these packages and the machzor and everything? All my kids lulam and esrogim. Too many things to worry about. Therefore, we're concerned, zera shami yavirenu. If somebody sees you carrying your lulav in the street, they're not going to remember to point it out to you. Everybody's focused on themselves. However, says the Ran, ava b'mila, when you have a brismila, how many people are involved in the act? One. It's the moel. If anybody sees the moel walking outside in the street, they're going to say, hey, you're not allowed to walk in the street. Everybody's gathered around for the brismila. Everybody's watching. Everybody's looking at and focusing their attention on the moel. Now the moel's going to stand up and say, oh yeah, I forgot. I don't even know how to do this. Let me go and learn how to do it. What do you mean? You don't think someone in the room is going to stop him and say, what do you mean? You're not allowed to carry the knife outside on Shabbos? Everybody's focused on him. He's not going to make the mistake. Nobody's busy with anything else, the Ran says. On Sukkot, on Rosh Hashanah, when everybody's busy with the mitzvah of shofar, and everybody's busy with the mitzvah of lulav, so then we say, nobody's paying attention to anybody else, and if someone else mistakenly carries the shofar, the lulav outside, no one's going to stop them. Over here by the brismila, where no one else is focused on anything. Who would have something else to do on a day when there's a brismila in the shul? Everybody's looking just at the mole. If the mole stands up and he says, hey, I have to go carry my knife to go learn how to do the brismila before I do it here, everyone's going to stop him. There's no concern at all. Say the Acharon, and maybe let's transfer that into our case as well. When it comes to Purim that falls out on Shabbos, why are we not allowed to lay in the Megillah on Purim Shechalis B'Shabbos? Gzeirah Shem Yavirenu. The Gzeirah is, since all of us have an individual obligation to do the mitzvah Mikra Megillah on Purim, therefore, you're going to say, I'm focused on my own mitzvah. If I happen to pass somebody else in the street holding his Megillah in his hand, I'm not even going to pay attention to him because I'm so busy figuring out which minion am I dominating at and what time are they going to get there, and I'm running to the shul to make sure I don't miss it. I don't want to miss the brachas. I don't want to miss the Mikra Megillah. So I'm all nervous about my own mitzvah. So now the Chacham pushed it up to Friday. Let's say you have one kid in the neighborhood who became a bar mitzvah today. Says the Binyan Shlomo, you have one kid in the neighborhood. He's the only one that's going to go ahead and be involved in the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. You think someone's going to take their attention off him? What's everybody doing today? We all came to shul. We're celebrating his bar mitzvah. We came to shul. He's the only one who has to go ahead and read the Megillah. So what's the concern? What's the concern? Everyone's going to be focused on their own mitzvah and they're not going to stop him? Everyone's going to stop him. Everyone's going to notice him. Just like the Ran says, everyone's going to notice the moel who's going to do his bris milah and carries the knife outside, so too over here, everyone's going to notice as well, and there's no concern on Shem Yavirenu. But we get back to the more fundamental question. What about the fact that the Chacham said you're not allowed to do it today? Even if Shem Yavirenu applies, should we say that the child has an obligation to do it because now he became a gadol, and now the obligation is still in place? There just happens to be a side issa derabanan. Or do you say no? Back to the Rebbe Kiva Eger. Once the Chacham said you're not allowed to do this on Shabbos, it means the mitzvah doesn't apply anymore. Just like shofar doesn't apply and lulav doesn't apply, maybe over here Megillah doesn't apply at all. And if the katan becomes a gadol, if it becomes a bar chayuva on Shabbos itself, we should say the mitzvah doesn't apply at all, and there's no reason for you to even think about it. This was a machlokas in the Gedolei Achronim in the times of the Binyan Shlomo and the Avnei Nezer. It became a contemporary discussion in the 1900s as well. Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin and Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld argued with the contemporaries of their time. The Baril Diskin and Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, who were the two Gedolim in Yerushalayim at the time, argued, absolutely, the Katan has to lay in the Megillah on Purim Shechalias B'Shabbos. It's a tremendous Chiddush. Tremendous Chiddush. I assume they would say the same thing when it comes to, let's say, no, could it ever work that the second day of Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos? I don't know, calendars and all, can't be? Lo Adurosh, so I guess it can't. In the days of the Gemara, yeah. Right, in the days of the Gemara, right, but it's not relevant to us. So anyway, that's what they argued here. They argued here that if the child is becoming a Bar Chiyuva on Purim, that falls out on Shabbos, and the whole rest of the community laying the Megillah on Friday, and he's the only one who's now Chayiv, and he wasn't Chayiv yesterday, they argue that in that case, like Rabbi Kiva Eger, the mitzvah is still there. And therefore the child should go ahead and lane the Megillah on Purim Shechalias B'Shabbos because he did not have the opportunity to perform his mitzvah yesterday. Again, it's a fascinating sugya. I think it has consequences in many of the sugyas that we discussed, and you have to figure out each one on its own how it translates into each particular case. But just in general, this is a general overview of this Gzeirah Shem Yavirenu, of where it's applied, of where it's not, of where the limits are, perhaps on whether we should say once Gzeira Shema Yavirenu is instituted, maybe we should say it's as if the whole mitzvah itself does not apply at all, and even if a person goes ahead and fulfills that mitzvah, it's as if they've done nothing.